Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Season's greetings from the Savage Nation. Boy, do I have a special treat for you. It's the best of 2010 from the Savage Nation. Here is the best from Michael Savage from the month of January. We don't have tough men running America. We have calculating men. We have devious men. We have shrewd men. But none of them are tough enough for the times we are living in. None of them are tough enough to face the animals that would cut your throat, that would slash your daughter's throat in front of your eyes and throw it down a well. None of these men are tough enough for the job. Do you understand what I said to you? Now I'll go a step further. I will go a step further, and this is going to be tough for many of you to take. If you were to turn the clock back to the FBI of the 1960s, the late 60s, during the J. Edgar Hoover period, when there was an attempt to overthrow the American government by the American left, and if you were to look at the dossiers that the FBI was compiling on the Weather Underground and on radical fellow travelers, you would recognize that they have taken over America. I don't know how to put it to you, but this country has been taken over by radical college communists. Make no mistake about it. They're vicious and they're shrewd, but they're not tough enough to face off against the enemies that would cut your throat and throw you down a well. That's my opinion. There's only one thing that could save us, and that's profiling, profiling, and more profiling. The whole concept of profiling is a construct of the enemy himself. The whole idea that we're even talking about it shows that they've already beaten us. They've already beaten us halfway to the goal posts. A triple there. You got a triple there. You got a man of color, you got a Muslim, and you got an African all in one. Put an Irish nun in a wheelchair at a TSA, and you'll see how tough they can be. Oh, I've seen them go through Irish nuns' wheelchairs. I've seen them frisk diapers of two-year-old white babies. But when you see an African Muslim come aboard an airplane, they practically get on a prayer rug and beg them for forgiveness. And so, as I say, the enemy has 50% down the goal already. 50% to the goal already. They've got you beaten because you won't even look them in the eye and say, I don't trust you. I don't like the way you look. I don't like your eyes. I don't like what you look like. I think you're going to blow this plane up. Go over there. We're going to strip you. That's what has to happen in order for us to survive. And if you think that I'm wrong, it shows you how brainwashed you are. I'll tell you right now that unless we get men capable of killing the killers, we're dead. Now, I have something to read to you. Remember about a year ago, starting in January, I read to you anonymous letters on the Savage Nation from an unknown magazine writer who wanted to interview me, and many of you said, don't do it, don't do it. And I kept reading his emails to me, remember? And it turned out to be The New Yorker, turned out to be Khalef Asena. I invited him out to California, did an interview in May. It didn't run until, I think, September. I don't know when it came out. But I was very happy with it. I'm very pleased with it because it's balanced. By no means does it make me into a saint, but it doesn't make me into a devil. In other words, he didn't do a liberal hit piece on me. And I was very pleased with the result. In fact, I liked the cartoon so much, I printed up a couple of copies for all of my various studios. Because, A, I thought it was balanced and fair, as opposed to fair and balanced. And B, I grew up reading New Yorker profiles as well as the New York Times. And to me, it's a big damn deal to be profiled in the New Yorker. So I'm proud of it. Well, now this comes to me out of nowhere. Actually, it came to my web manager, in Florida who forwarded it to me. And it came from an anonymous magazine. I'm going to read this to you while you're dialing and whiling. And it said, my email was bounced back, but here's what I'd like to know. Blank Magazine has asked me to conduct its legendary interview with Michael Savage, and I'm hoping you can connect me with him. As you may know, the interview is one of the last great long-form Q&As in journalism, 8,000 words, and it would give Michael a broad canvas to talk about life, liberty, and, well, anything else he cares to talk about. Happy to tell you more, but first wanted to make sure this is the best way to contact Michael Savage. Please let me know as soon as possible because we're coordinating our spring publishing schedule. And then he gives his name and blah, blah, blah. So he and I went back and forth yesterday in the rain, him in a car, me not in a car. I've lost the emails, but it ended with me getting angry, saying that was idiotic. When I asked him why, I said to him, have you read the New Yorker interview? Yes, I've read it. I said, what did you think about it? So he said to me in an email, I think it made you look too sane. So I said, that's the most idiotic reply I've ever gotten. Why would I submit to an interview with you? Well, what are you playing the sane, insane game that I heard in New York in 1968? I said, you know, I mean, where are you coming from? What do you mean too sane? I said, do you think I earned a doctorate, wrote 25 books, and built this media, the level in the media I'm at because I'm insane? So then he wrote back an apologetic letter, and here's the last email from him. I asked him, why do you want to interview me? And he said, finally a moment to respond from an actual keyboard. I want to interview Michael because I can't think of another person out there better qualified to rattle the readers of this magazine. This will be a long, uncensored Q&A, the longest left in journalism. Oh, woe to us. To let you answer some big questions in your own words, not my verminy ones. I guess he listens to the show. He says, why has America fallen off track and how can it bounce back? Why won't a 43-inch plasma screen TV or a new Cadillac Escalade solve all my problems? What's really wrong with a little hedonism now and then? Why shouldn't we live life waiting for the great rewards of the afterlife? He says, I want to interview because I get sucked into your broadcasts even when there's more important stuff to do, like picking up my 6-year-old from school, thank God he's married, and by the way, to a woman, or earning an actual living. And my guess is you'd be even more engaging in face-to-face conversation. And if not, then at least I'll be able to turn off the radio and get on with my life. So apparently he listens. Then he says, Savage, I'm interested in your past because I have a love affair with the Bronx of yore too, and also good jazz and newspapers that left print on your fingers. But I also want you to explore your vision of the present and the future so that you know the college kids and grandpas who flipped through this will understand there are points of view that don't fit neatly into categories like conservative. More than anything else, I want to give you the space, 8,000 words or so, to challenge our readers' expectations and entrenched views, to get people mad, to wake people up, and low, to shake the foundations of the iconic magazine itself. Hey, Savage, if you really believe pornography and Hollywood stupidity, two of our favorite subjects, are weakening America, what better place to say that than in the pages of my magazine? You asked about the New Yorker profile. I admit that I love The New Yorker and actually wasn't surprised that it was a fair and nuanced piece. You came off as someone with real humanity and complexity, and that piece, which I read last summer and have been thinking about ever since, was what convinced me to reach out to you for an interview instead of just slacking off and streaming you on my computer. So please let me know your thoughts and your wife's thoughts and your listeners' thoughts and Teddy's thoughts. Thanks, blank. Question to the audience. Should I do this interview with this major publication? Yes or no?
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I hope you're all enjoying this time of year. Here is a holiday treat for you from Santa Savage. It's the best of 2010 from the Savage Nation. Here is the best from Michael Savage from the month of January. Huckleberry Finn needs music right now in order to keep going. Huckleberry needs... Wait a minute, stop. No. Didn't you get me Offenbach for today? You said you had Offenbach. Where is it? That's what I'm talking about. Now you're talking. I wish I had been born in 1870. I would like to have been a cohort of Toulouse-Lautrec. nice, different age. Gas lamp era. Prior to that nasty Edison. It's not exactly what I want. Do you have the Follies Bergère, or is this it? No. That's some simpy New York. That's close. I see the Can-Can girls and the garters and all of the drunk Frenchmen in the audience. Come on, who doesn't love this? An innocent time in the world. The War of 1812 was over. The U.S. Civil War was over. Everybody knows this, right? Can't you just see them on the stage dancing? This is pre-electricity, isn't it, guys? It's a different era. There were no problems like today. Nothing. Different world. All right, and I made my point. Sometimes I drift off in reveries, and I used to dream, and people say to me, if you could be born any time, where would you like to be born? I hope God's not listening, because he's liable to say, all right, I heard that. I was listening to your show. I had nothing to do with it. What happens the day I go to, like, to heaven, and God says, I was listening on January 7th, 2010. Didn't you say that you wanted to be born in 1870? No, I'm just kidding, God. Well, no, I take you seriously. I mean, you think you're so important. So you're going to be reborn in 1870 in France. No, please. I don't want to eat rotten cheese. Please. I don't want to live in a place where there's no hot running water. And although I like garlic, God, I don't want to be around everybody else who has garlic breath, if you don't mind. There was no mouthwash in those days. I could turn it into a show topic. When would you like to be reborn? You know, if you could pick it, what would it be? I just always liked that period. I even liked the art of that period. All of the Impressionists were painting around then. I mean, through certainly 30 years and more beyond that, but that's about when it began. If my Art 101 memory, is still operational. You know, one of my hobbies is boating. And you know what I have in my hand? I'm like a kid in a toy shop now. I used to buy, I bought cups, old Navy cups, from a guy up in Seattle. Like cups and saucers from a captain's ship. Plates, and they're like brand new. I don't know how he got them. Oh, they're beautiful. They're costly. I love the heavy china. I can't wait to have a cup. Do you ever have coffee in a Navy cup? Heavy cups of a certain type. They're not made of melanin, I'll tell you that right now. It says lead-free, but they're not melanin. These were not made in China. These were made for the U.S. Navy when they were still made in America. You know what I mean, before Clinton took power. Before you can't even find a cup anymore in a store not made somewhere else. Heavy, you hear? You hear that? Just the sound of it. I feel like I'm Admiral Rickover holding. No, I can't explain it. Every time I go on my boat, it's cold. I want to have a cup of coffee. It's the first thing I want. Even if I had one at home. Now I have a cup, finally, to do it with. There is something about a cup of coffee on a boat, particularly wet and cold out here. It's horrible. It's like a nightmare. It's like Noah's Ark. It's like 40 days and 40 nights without let up. I can't stand the weather. The only reason I'm mentioning it, which is a no-no in talk radio, because, you know, like it's national, and you shouldn't tell them what time is or weather, because there's so many zones and weather. Because I'll tell you why. Although San Francisco is backwards in every other way, socially, we're just the anus of the empire out here in terms of social disorder. But in so many other ways, what happens here first will hit you next. So get ready for the storms that are coming. We've had day after day after day. I mean, rain like you can't believe. And so it's going into the Midwest, and it'll hit the East Coast in 3 days. So get ready for another wonderful series of blizzards. I never saw it like this. It must be global freezing. How do you like it? I did remember it was like this once before. But I've lived in the islands, in Samoa once, and in Fiji. You ever read the book Rain by Somerset Maugham? Well, I lived through Rain by Somerset Maugham. When the children were very young and I was collecting plants in Fiji, we were in a little house in Suva with a tin roof. You cannot believe what it's like to live under a rainstorm in the tropics that doesn't let up for 20 or 30 days in a row. It can really get on your nerves. It can really make you want to listen to Jim Morrison and take him literally. You know, I'm telling you, there's just nowhere to go with it. Play Jim Morrison for a minute on the Savage Nation.
You know, the day destroys a night. Night divides a day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the
That message goes out to the holder of a Cal College degree on MSNBC. It's time to listen to Jim Morrison. We realize that the DDT and other toxic chemicals, probably PVC, did hurt you neurologically. There's no question. That's where the tremors come from. And the bizarre statements that you make on television. It's only a matter of time until Daddy GE dumps you. Very soon, Daddy GE is going to just send you a... You're going to come to work one day, sir, and they're not going to let you in the building. There's going to be a cardboard box waiting for you outside of the MSNBC building. In it, you will find the remnants of your once glorious past. All of it will be behind you. And then, of course, you'll try talk radio, but Air America's gone. So what's left for you? That's why I say, sir, it's time to listen to Jim Morrison and take him literally. All right, I'm having too much fun, and I keep admitting it. On MichaelSavage.com, you can see all the important stories, and you can keep contributing to Lieutenant Behenna, or please send the poor guy a letter. That's the least you can do. I'm thinking of organizing a group to go down and visit him. I had a lot of red wine later. Can I tell you something about red wine? The night before I went to a restaurant, I ordered some red wine from Italy. Horrible. I had one sip. One sip, I already felt a backhead headache. I sent it. I said, sorry, I don't want it. I pulled out a bottle of, it was Chianti. I had it in one of my locations from 2000. Now, Chianti is a Sauvignon, Sangiovese grape, number one. Many people get headaches from Chianti wine, and I know about the whole tyrosine issue. I wrote about it in 1983. So you should understand a lot of it is not exactly true, and the tyrosine levels go down in time. I had a bottle of, what was the name of the brand? I shouldn't even give it, but it was a Ducale. You know what it was, gold label, 2000 Oro. And all of the rough, you know, taste went out of the wine. I was able to drink like a half a bottle, no headache. I woke up feeling like there was velvet between my joints. It was amazing. Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
A little A-Train and The Savage Nation, the great Duke Ellington. Then we're going to go to something else and something else and something else. It is the Savage Nation. Combination doo-wop, jazz. Give me a little Mel Allen. It's a high fly ball. I want to go back to my childhood. That's it. I want to live in the past. Oh, thank you, Mel. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Walking around with a transistor radio, crew cut haircut, a little kid with corduroy pants, innocent, no sexual feelings, nothing. All that was on my head was baseball, but now it's a different story. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? There's so many problems. Who asked for this? I should disappear into the ethers. White Hat, West Palm Beach, Jupiter. Maybe I should go to Jupiter instead of Jupiter, Florida. You know that most of America walks around like they don't even know what's going on. They don't know where Iran is. If you said Iran, Ahmadinejad, Hitler, they wouldn't know if you were talking about a baseball team or if you were talking about science fiction. They go to malls. All they want to do is jingle bells. Can you blame them? It's the way most people are, actually, when you think about it. So why can't I be like most people? Answer, because I never was. I've always had the weight of the world on my shoulders. Even when I was a little kid in the Bronx, they said, that one has the weight of his shoulders, the weight of the world on his shoulders. That one has the weight of the world on his shoulders. That one. They always said that one. Can you play See the USA in a Chevrolet with Donna? What's her name? Donna Reed. I want to hear See the USA. That's all.
USA in your Chevrolet.
It.
America is asking you to call.
That's when there still was a Chevrolet.
America's the greatest land of all.
And they made the, turn it off already. That's another time. You know, it's like Gillette, Friday Night Fights. Everything was different. It was a different world. So 2007 hasn't been too great for me. I wouldn't say horrible, okay? Horrible is death. Horrible is a family member dying. Horrible is a dog getting run over by your own car in the driveway. Horrible is the doctor tells you you have bowel cancer and 6 months to live. Horrible is an emergency room. So I'm not complaining, don't get me wrong. But I am in my own way. I am in my own way. You see the latest story out here? A mortgage plan that will freeze certain subprime interest rates for 5 years. Now, on the face of it, you say, wow, how compassionate. A three-pronged solution to stem the flow of mortgage foreclosures. Now, let me ask you something. How many of these who are about to go into foreclosure are illegal aliens? Has anyone asked that question but me? Answer, no. The government, as you well know, was forcing banks to lend to people who were not only illegal aliens, but unqualified for a mortgage. And if they didn't, if the banks didn't lend the money to people who didn't qualify, they were going to be sued by various divisions of the U.S. government. Now they're about to go belly up, and who's going to bail them out? The very same government that said, you must lend money to them. Now who's going to pay for the bailout? You and I. You and I. Now, what about stronger lending standards? Like when I was young and I wanted to get a mortgage, I couldn't afford one. They wouldn't give me one. Why? Because I couldn't qualify. Why couldn't I qualify? I didn't have sufficient income. Therefore, I couldn't buy a house. But you see, everything's changed in PC America. And so you have a socialist-light government that said to banks for years, you lend money to illegal aliens or we will sue you. In fact, you can't even ask the so-called citizenship status of a potential borrower, or will sue you for racism. So the banks were over a barrel. They said, but. The government said, we'll give it to you in the you-know-what unless you lend it to the illegal alien and unless you lend it to people who don't qualify. So Michael Savage again asks the question it's a question no one is going to ask. How many of these people in a subprime mortgage crisis are illegal aliens? How many of these people are those that banks were forced to lend to? Could you do me a favor and explain to the audience through music why I said very bad year? And so in order to do that, you have to play three things for me in this order. You have to play Mel Allen, you have to play Johnny Philip Morris, and then you have to come back to me with a doo-wop song. Go ahead, see if you can do that.
Drive hits the deep right field. That ball is going, it is gone.
Yep,
come in, Berlin. Secret message. Come in, Berlin. Berlin, come in. Berlin, calling Berlin. This is a secret coded message to the right wing in America. It's dip, 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 dip. If you read the first letter of each word and reverse them with lemon juice, you'll see what I'm actually saying. I'm in Berlin. Berlin, come in. Crazy leftists. They actually beep. I say it. Turn this off. I don't go for this. I don't go for it. Now, the first mortgage that this family ever got was my father in 1954 or 5. He bought a house for $14,500 in Queens, New York. And the mortgage, you had to put down, I think, 20 or 25% at the least in those days, right? So what did he have to put down, like $3,000? It was a lot of money in those days. And then he took out a mortgage, and then he paid off the house. He had to qualify for the mortgage, and if he couldn't qualify, they wouldn't have given it to him. And he paid off the house, and that was the end of it. In those days, my father wouldn't buy a car on time because he said that was cheating. Can you imagine the thoughts of those guys in those days? A mortgage you had to pay off because who had cash to pay a whole house off? Nobody. Unless you worked for some people on a certain street that you ate spaghetti on. But the fact is, nobody really that we knew had those kind of cash in the wallpaper in Belrose, Queens. So we didn't, and you had to take a mortgage. But the fact of the matter is, a car was another story. You bought a used car and you paid cash. Why? Because if you bought it on time, you were cheating. And you couldn't really afford it, and you were a faker. That means 99.9% of the people on the road today wouldn't have a car. I mean, you got to be crazy not to pay a car off, you know? Boise, Idaho, DJ, you're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
I'm like, I'm only 26 years old, and I can't relax in a restaurant, but what about a movie theater? Those are the worst for me. I just cringe, because right when I sit down, I see a family with five or six kids that just want to talk throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, they think it's their personal video experience in their living room. Yeah, well, so in my day, we had ushers that went around with a flashlight, and they put it in your eye if you talked. It didn't always work, but, you know, we mocked the ushers, or we threw candy at them, you know. I mean, we weren't all dolls, believe me. But we knew not to talk because the other kids would have gotten into a fight with us if we talked. There was self-control because the audience would have controlled you otherwise.
Well, now I look around and it's like I'm the only one that cares. The audience doesn't seem to care. It's like I'm weird because I'm upset that these parents want to
talk. Yeah, I can't even go to. I go to a movie very seldom. I try to go very late at night or off. You know, I went to two movies in the whole year. That's what I watch at home, you know. What do you expect in a movie theater? The lowest common denominator is in a movie theater. They're not the highest. They're not generally not working people. They're either senior citizens who are looking for the senior, you know, the $5 ticket. You ever see them line up at 12:30? The Social Security crowd? You don't want to be in there after a Medicare a meal, I tell you that. You don't want to be in that because they cut back on the air conditioning. You could die in these theaters. I had it in the elevator last week, too, in the building I'm in. You don't want to go in those elevators. It's owned by some conglomerate from Boston. I'm in San Francisco. And they told the management not to put the fan on in the elevator. You could just die if you get in the wrong time of day after the seniors had visited for the medication, whatever they give them, Metamucil. I don't know. You take your life in your hand in the elevator. What are you going to do? I don't mean when they're in there with you. I'm talking about after they get out and you get in and the elevator starts to climb. What are you going to do at that point?
All right.
I want to thank my producer, Doug Lynn, and I want to thank my new associate producer. You know, normal people do this. I should have done this over the years. I don't do it. All I know is I'll be back in a moment on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I thought about dogs last night. I got to tell you this. I'm not going to go in my dog is great, but my dog is great. This 10-pound poodle, Teddy. I was mad at him for 2 days. I gave him the cold shoulder. He was hurt by it because he peed all over the house from 24. I think it scared him with the atomic bomb and the screaming and the shooting and the yelling. What I had to clean up for 2 days around the house, little hidden areas there. But I forgave him. Now we're friends again. Now every morning I get up, it's the same thing. He sits on this pink chair. I have a recliner that I bought. I don't know how they let this store into Marin County. All the libs were like mad at it. Lazy Boy. When Lazy Boy opened in Marin County, all the phony snobs, ooh, we can't have that in our county. That's not classy. I went and I bought a beautiful recliner that is so ugly, it's unbelievable. It's like ugly chair. Every house must have an ugly chair. That's the only chair you actually wind up sitting in. Beautiful chairs nobody will sit in. If they do, you have to worry that you're going to stain it, you know, with something. But the ugly chair you could sit in, you can eat in it, you can drink in it. Coffee could spill on it, doesn't matter. This chair is so comfortable that Teddy took it over. It's his chair. So every morning it's a pink recliner from Lazy Boy. He jumps on the chair and he puts his back up against it and he gives me his two paws out, I swear to God. And he does it. I taught him how to do high five. Give me five. And we do like a, we play. Like I do the hands back and forth. Give me five, give me four, give me three. He loves this game. He could have been a circus dog. My dog could have been anything. I wonder how he is. He had a little growth underneath his private part that was worrying me a little bit. He went to the vet today. I don't even know how it came out. You know, maybe we should get the vet on the show, see how Teddy's private parts are, because I want to breed him this year. I don't want him to disappear. How? You know, once in a few hundred thousand years, a perfect animal comes along. How could his genes be lost? He's like Western civilization himself, my dog. We got to breed this dog. I got to have five or six puppies and keep two of them. I'm not going to sell them. You think I'm going to sell them and have a liberal buy them? Oh, yeah, I want. And they're going to send me pictures of them being mauled in a pit bull arena to torture me? No. I would never sell puppies. No, I couldn't do it, you know, because I don't know how they'll be used. I'll keep a couple of them. So I'm becoming like dog, more and more doggy. I mean, I love the dogs. I just love them so much. Because you can trust them. When I thought about it last night, his eyes. Now that he like, you know, like he knows I like him again after the peeing thing where I gave him the cold shoulder. Dogs' eyes are very interesting. If you don't abuse your dog, you only get a couple of emotions out of them, but none of them are hate. Did you realize what I just said to you? Most dogs don't know how to hate. Yeah, you could train a dog to hate. I'm not talking about that. In general, in a normal house, a dog has a set of emotions that you could see in their eyes. admiration, love, happiness. Maybe it's sometimes a little hurt when you leave them and you're going to go out and be a human without them. They don't understand it because they think that they're you. Why can't you take me to that wedding tonight, Dad? What is wrong with you? I'm as good as you. I know, son, but not everybody sees the world the way you do. Not everybody wants short, furry creatures running around at weddings or in restaurants. You'll have to just stay home. So you get those, but you never get hate. Does dog ever look at you with hatred? No, which is why we love them. You understand that? Well, you should have a dog. And by the way, don't trust people who don't have dogs. The tiny lump under his testicles turns out to be benign. There's nothing there. So, I mean, it was pretty worrisome because there's a little tiny lump there. And like any living creature, you know, or the way of all flesh, you worry. You know, maybe the little guy has cancer or something. But it turns out he's probably bitten by some bug and it scabbed over and it disappeared. But he sure enjoyed licking himself down there all the months that he thought of. He had a justification. Look, who can blame him, you know? I think the reason we're not... dogs, or one of the reasons that they are dogs, is they can do that, however you look at it. I mean, normal men can't do that. That's why we're not dogs. If we were, see, if we were double jointed like that, we probably would be dogs. So God made it so you can't do that. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you have an animal, it's amazing to watch how they behave. Even a little thing like a bite in their private parts, what they do with. I'm just elated. I'm not felinophobic, don't get me wrong. I'm not exactly a felinophile, but I prefer dogs because dogs to me are covert and cats dogs are overt and cats are covert. Cats remind me of people in Pacific Heights or in the San Francisco government. Everything they do is hidden and secretive. It's like Choirgate. They're trying to sweep it into the cat litter box, but I kind of doubt that that's where it's going to end up. You know, they're like cats in this city, like cats that are really dirty. That gussy themselves up with Da Vinci dresses, but behind it, you know that there's dirty underwear. That's what the whole city reminds me of. The miners came in 49 and 51. The whores. You ever hear that? Mark Twain wrote it. I'm sure many of you love it. I didn't write it. Mark Twain did before the Fairness Doctrine. That's not a dirty word. In 51, he said in 49 the miners came in 51 the whores, and then he says, and then something evolved from it. It's called Pacific Heights. That's how they run San Francisco, but they put on dresses from back east. You know, we have one of the best Opry's west of the Hudson and the Mississippi River. We put on quite a symphony out here. Oh, it's so out of town that I love it. There's no bigger small town than San Francisco. I wouldn't mind if they were patriotic or Americana, but my God, how could they be so anti-American? It's hard to believe. Everything that's family-oriented, they despise. They spit on the flag, the Boy Scouts. But thank God Teddy's okay, that's all. I can't wait to see the little guy after the show. Go home, talk to him. Say, Teddy, I am so glad you went to the doctor and you don't have a tumor under your private parts, but stop licking them already. There's no excuse anymore. You can't say, Dad, it itches, or Dad, there's a problem. You're just being a dirtbag if you keep doing it, Ted. I can't do that because I'll give him a complex. I think you can give dogs a complex. They are very sensitive to criticism. Oh, my God. They're like liberals. Liberals are very good at pretending they don't care what you say to them. But boy, do they care. Whoa, they're thin-skinned. Goodbye jobs. Hello, mom and dad, say young adults. New story. Many young adults are turning to an old standby to weather the recession, moving back with mom and dad. So although they go out to clubs at night and they have their gelled hair and they look cool, they're really going back to the same room that they were in before they went to college. Instead of looking for a job and making their mother and father's life a little easier. So maybe I should ask that question. It might be more fun than all the news. You can puke from the news. You can get sick from it. You get crazy from it. You could actually get ill if you look at the news like I have to do every day. So I'll focus on goodbye jobs, hello mom and dad, say young adults. We're talking about kids that went to college. I don't know what they majored in. Probably SOS 101 or poli-sci. Whenever you hear Sosa Poli Sci, you know that they're going to be barristers. It's a new word for a coffee. And look, when I go into a coffee place and there's a young person, you think I sneer at them? I don't. But please, don't ask them their opinion on world affairs. Do me a favor. Don't ask their opinion on anything for that matter. They're still in diapers. They may look like a man, but they're still in diaper. They're still in diapers. How old were you when you had your first kid? 24, 25, 26. I had two kids before I was 30. I was working three jobs. Okay? I didn't ask for a handout from the government. I didn't go to Aunt Sam and say, give me a check so I could go out at night with gelled hair. I also wanted a new Porsche with a bib on it in 1982. But you know what? I said, that's not that important to look like a moron driving around with a Porsche with a bib on it. Nothing against a Porsche nor a bib. My children needed a bib, not a Porsche. I had my priorities right. Now, one in seven parents with grown children say they had a boomerang kid move back home in the last year, according to a study released by the Pew Research Center. So if the liberal Pew Research Center says it's one in seven of a grown kid coming back home to be a goon in the bed again, a grown goon who probably doesn't get up in the morning, I guarantee you they stay in bed till 11 waiting for the mother to bring them a cup of coffee. Oh, what a rough night, yeah. Well, but this is typical in Italy anyway. I mean, there's nothing unusual about it when you think about it. Many parents like having a grown-up and a child there. They love it. It's sort of a Munchausen by proxy thing. You know, like, you heard about Munchausen by proxy, didn't you? The mother, it's usually the mother, who creates symptoms in a child. They want the child to be sick. They actually make the child sick in order to have a sick child around. That's a Munchausen by proxy. Now, I don't know what name I could give adult children, 18 to 29, who no longer live alone, but they've gone home to mom and dad. I don't know what you'd call it. I wouldn't call it Munchausen by proxy. I'd call it deadbeat by proxy. Maybe the parents turned them into a person who can't make a living. But that's the sign of the times.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Merry Christmas, Savage Nation. And here is a gift for you from Santa Savage. It's the best of 2010 from the Savage Nation. Here is the best from Michael Savage from the month of January. I love the 50s when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. Let's play some rock and roll. That's all. So we had a president that we knew we could trust. We weren't, wondering which side he was on. General Dwight D. Eisenhower. We knew which side he was on. That's all. This one, you don't know which side he's on. How did we elect this guy? No background. Zero. I guess Rahm Emanuel and Axelrod decided to make him the president with money from George Soros and others. And look what we have now.
Love is a losing game, and love can be a shame. I know I'm a fool, you see. Love that fool is me, dummy one.
All right, whatever. I went up at I went to Best Buy and looked at cameras today for the best single shot camera around. I'm looking at a Canon. I have a Sony. I think I'm going to get a Canon. I have a cousin who is a photographer. He told me that's the best. Then I stopped at the Ferrari dealer. I like going into service bays for Ferrari. It's like a model shop. Said hello to the guys, and I said, "Can I see the Ferrari California? It's a nice car. It really is. 20-inch wheels." It could actually go up driveways without bottoming out. Surprisingly doing well, the Ferrari business. You wouldn't understand this. I mean, there's unemployment, but I don't know who's buying them. There is a segment of America. Mansions are selling again. I predicted it. See, this is the problem that you liberals don't understand. You'll never understand. Leftists don't understand this. They think that because the Democrats took office and they started to feed it the trough, that the money would trickle down to the people. I predicted last year that the very same luxury items that were selling when the Republicans were in power would sell again. And I was right. Big beach homes are selling in the $20 million range in Florida again. Ferraris are selling again. Private jets are selling again. So in other words, it doesn't matter which party's in power. Some are going to feed at the troughs and some are going to buy the very same items again. It doesn't really matter. And that's the good news. That is the good news. And I'm all for it. I like a certain amount of greed and corruption. I think it's very healthy for society. What I don't like is incompetence when it comes to national security. If you were to say to me, what is the most important thing in a political party? Number one, national security. Number two, the economy. The rest is more or less a gibberish of the same. Yes, they differ on social issues a little bit here and a little bit there, but by and large, it's the same mess. So, you know, I'm not that excited about it all. He has failed us completely on the level of national security. His own intelligence guy said they have two strikes and they don't want a third. But for most Americans, Obama's already had the third strike. They don't trust him on national security. That's all. Anyway, here we are. Here we are. Kuwaiti, Haiti. I almost said, I said Haiti and Quake. I said, I called it a Kuwaiti. Haiti and Quake, I called Kuwaiti. Look how you forgot already, Haiti. 100,000 dead, millions homeless, and no one is gone already. How does this work? Catastrophe in the world, and we don't think about it. Is it because we're hardened? No, here's the reason. Because the ancient Romans were no different than we are. The ancient Greeks were no different than we are. The ancient Chinese were no different than we are. The philosophers of ancient Rome wrote the following. They wrote that the average Roman does not care about what's going on overseas. They don't care about what the legions are doing in Germania. The average Roman, he said, cares about the pebble in his shoe. Now, what does he mean by the pebble in his shoe? Taxes, taxes, taxes. Jobs, jobs, jobs. Safety, safety, safety. A government's number one job is to create and work only for the liberty of the people, according to Plato. And liberty means protecting us. They have failed to protect us. If you watch Brotherhood on Showtime, many of you don't know what I'm talking about. It's a pretty graphic illustration of what politics really comes down to. It's buying and selling and buying and selling and selling and buying. So now listen to Scott Brown about his phone call with President Obama and tell me what you think. Clip one first.
He called. He was called right away, which I thanked him for. And we were talking, and he said, you know, I look forward to meeting you and having an opportunity to work with you. And he said, I heard that you are open-minded and you're kind of an independent guy. And I said, well, Mr. President, I want to meet you, too. You have a wonderful family. I've always had great respect for your accomplishments. And, by the way, do you want me to bring the truck? I did say that. And he laughed. He says, well, you know, when I came down there, I didn't, you know, go at you too hard.
All right. Very nice so far. Very gentlemanly. Now the next one.
And I said, well, all kidding aside, I do have a basketball player daughter, and I know you play a lot of hoop, and I'd love to. You pick your best, and I'll take Ayler, and we'll play you 2-on-2. And he laughed again. I said, you know what, Mr. President, regardless of, you know, we may not agree on some things, but you have a sense of humor, and you have to have a sense of humor about politics.
Now already, here it comes. We may not agree on some things. You catch that? That's not even day one. Many of you thought he disagreed with Obama on everything, that he was the Messiah. You thought he was the Obama of the right. He had an opportunity and he blew it. Did you hear what I just said? Scott Brown has already blown his chances to ignite America and to get them behind him. Don't you hear? I mean, I'm the first because many of you are kind of sighing with relief, but you didn't listen. You didn't actually hear the man or the politician. You didn't hear him at all. You just said, wow, he won and the world's safe now. The world's safe for democracy. No, what you had there was a milquetoast guy saying he had a milquetoast conversation with the president. And they can't wait to play some hoops together. What he should have done, in my opinion, was gotten up there with fire and brimstone. He didn't have to be hateful about it. He doesn't work for MSNBC. He could have been strong without being hateful. He's not a talk radio host. He doesn't work for television. He could have retained his dignity, and he could have been strong. And he could have said, I was elected. I am so glad that I talked with the president. I can't wait to meet him and tell him why we must defeat socialized medicine. I can't wait to tell him why in Massachusetts we've had such a terrible experience with illegal aliens, and he must not push forward legalizing illegal aliens. I can't wait to meet the president off the basketball court so I can say to him why cap and trade is not only foolish financially, or economically rather, but it is also based upon false science. And I can also say to the president, trying Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and other terrorists who killed so many in civilian court while persecuting so many military members such as Lieutenant Behenna is a travesty, and it's why America is angry at politicians. And so, therefore, I cannot wait to meet you, Mr. President. Now that, my friends, would have been cause to celebrate. That would have been hopeful. That would have given you change, the kind of change that you were looking for.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I hope you're all enjoying this time of year. Here is a holiday treat for you from Santa Savage. It's the best of 2010 from the Savage Nation. Washington, D.C., Magda, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage. First, I wanted to thank you for speaking for our people. I'm from Kosovo, and I really wanted to thank you. I can't believe
it. Wait, I'm sorry. You're from where, Magda?
Kosovo.
Oh.
Kosovo.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Boy, have you suffered under Bill Clinton?
Oh, gosh, yes. And then...
How many hundreds of Christian monasteries and churches have been burned to the ground by the Albanian Muslims? Hundreds and hundreds. Not one of them ever appeared in a news report. Go on, please.
I wanted to make the point that I think it doesn't matter how much screening you're going to have. I think this jihadist will infect themselves before actually boarding into the plane.
Oh, you mean they're going to infect themselves with a biological agent?
Yeah, so it doesn't matter what screening you got.
God.
Next? Are they going to give us a physical exam before?
Oh, my God. You mean they don't even have to get it in a can?
Exactly.
You could have somebody infected with bubonic plague getting on a plane, you mean?
Right, or a deadly virus that is airborne. And
oh, my God.
That's, their strategy. That's what they're trying to do, and it doesn't really take, a person with I think it just takes a person with two neurons to figure that out.
Good God. Well, I'll tell you the truth. I didn't even think of that. That's because you and I both know that these fanatics are not thinking of the next diaper bomber. They're already on to the next skimata, right?
Yes, you're absolutely right.
And the next scheme is said to be biological agents. And I thought that they'd have to bring it on in a sort of an aerosolized can to aerosolize the biological agent. You're saying they themselves are the carrier.
To kill themselves, why not infect themselves right before boarding?
Oh,
before
God.
Going to the terminal. So I'm saying, what's next, a physical exam? So I think, do profiling.
So what's the solution then, Magda? What is the solution?
Profiling, racial, but just because I know them personally. But, and then I have a comment about Afghanistan. You always ask why we are in Afghanistan and Iraq and so on. I have a theory, a question. I think that we need to create theaters for these people, war theaters. When we started pulling out of Iraq, we saw a lot more activity coming up. I don't think that it was because he's sending 30,000 more troops. Because, we had Sassy, we had the synagogue in New York that they tried to, bomb with a missile. We had the South Carolina cell, we had the Ohio cell, the Detroit, the Dallas. All of this in the last 10 months, the activity has picked up over 200%. That means there are more money pouring in for here, whereas before they will go to, with Alan Saar in Iraq or, in Afghanistan.
So, Magda, are you in the intelligence community yourself?
Somewhat.
Yeah, I can hear it. I hope to God you're working for the U.S. government, because you sound like one smart person.
Well, I think that is a lot, what's going on, and also why they're not, you know, it doesn't mean that we didn't have any plots before, but it just means that we stopped them at a much earlier stage. We had Stasi with the WMD from Colorado. We have so many homegrown cells here, but we were able to stop them before. Now our defense.
No, wait. You mean under George Bush, because there was a more vigorous approach to the terrorist cells. Is that what you're saying?
No. I'm saying in the last 10 months alone, we had so many big.
Oh, you mean that were stopped?
Mm-hmm.
So why all of a sudden is the frequency increasing?
I think because, first of all, we took many theaters out, and so more money is pouring in from Al-Qaeda, from Saudi, to, you know, for these people to do activities elsewhere. Whereas before, they will try, you know, give money to Al-Ansar, which was the, resistance in Iraq.
You're saying because they're not fighting as much in Iraq, they have the money to spend here?
Exactly. And in Afghanistan. With these people, you need to create war theaters. Otherwise, they will come here. And this is what is happening. And also that the whole intel community has been, you know, with Napolitano and everybody, we have been, it's just very demoralized.
So do you believe Napolitano is fit for this job?
Oh, no, please. No, you are so right. No.
Why was she picked for this job of all the people that could have been picked? I don't care whether they're left-wing, but you need somebody with security training, intelligence. Why her? Where did she come from?
It's just political. What's happening in many agencies right now is that you have all these political appointees, and you have all these career professionals who are trying to do their jobs, but they are fearing the political appointees from mainly this administration and the late Bush administration that they're going to stab them in the back. So they can't do
that. So in other words, they're still playing politics. They're putting in these left-wing Obama appointees who stab the actual intelligence agents in the back who are doing their job.
Exactly. So they.
Oh, boy.
And they handcuff them. You know, you need a court order to do anything to, you know.
Yes. Yes. Well, I would like to make you the chief of security of the Savage Nation. You're the best caller I've had on this subject ever.
FDR, you are my favorite, my idol. You, out of anyone in the entire West, you know, and I think in the entire world, you have spoken.
Well, come on, let's just say I'm your favorite talk shows. That'll work for me.
You are well known. You are well known within our people. You spoke so well and such truth that...
You know, I carry around I'm not into, like, good luck charms, but I carry one around. It is a Christian coin that the Serbians give out, the priests give out. You know the one I mean? They're round and there's a cross on it?
Yes.
It was given to me by a Serbian priest after Bill Clinton mercilessly bombed Serbia for 78 straight days with U.S. bombers that were repainted with NATO markings in order to please his friends in Europe, his European socialist friends, notably Javier Solana of Spain. I remember that incident like I'm standing here today. They destroyed your country mercilessly in order to steal Kosovo from the Serbs.
Thank you, God, for somebody like you.
They burnt over 300 churches to the ground. Not one of those churches was ever shown by the Associated Press. Never. Never. And it was all done to steal Kosovo from Serbia, which have been part of Serbia since the 1100s. One of the greatest geographic thefts in the history of the world has gone on, and nobody knows about it.
No, nobody knows. And you're the only one that has been saying it. And I just thank you. And as a Serbian, I will thank you forever.
Now, I'd like to know more about you. So here's what I'd like to say, Magda. Stay on the line. I'm going to send you a free copy of Banned in Britain, and I'd like to initiate an email correspondence with you, if you don't mind. You can use even a fake address. It doesn't matter to me.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
Jeremiah, you're on The Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I wanted to share with you, I agree with you. I believe animals do have spirits. And one thing that really started me on that journey is I read this article years ago conducted by a scientist, and it talked about the era before the prop in the boats and the era of the humpback whales during that. And what happened was the way whales communicate with the sound vibrations, every single humpback whale on Earth was completely in tune with every other humpback whale.
Oh, wait, around the globe?
Yeah, before the era of the prop, before there was any nests in any...
Oh, my God, that's awesome. That is awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's sort of like a...
Look, all I know is one of the reasons I've always had dogs and always enjoyed dogs ever since I was a little boy, and they've grounded me into the spirit world, and I know no one has to argue. You can argue anything you want. Nobody has proof one way or the other. But when I look at my humble dog, I don't see him. I don't see that dog as me, man, you, dog.
Right.
I don't see
right.
the dog as equal to me. The dog depends upon me for everything. The dog needs me to keep him alive. I recognize that. So I know I'm a higher intelligence than a dog. That's a given. Man is a higher intelligence than all other animals. There's no question about that. And as such, we have an obligation to be kind to them. Even if we eat them, we must slaughter them with kindness, not with cruelty. I mean, if you want to read the biblical law on slaughter, it's supposed to be slaughter with compassion. I don't know if people even understand that. In other words, just because you hunt doesn't mean you get to torture.
Right.
Right? So even though man has the ability and the right to eat the animal, he has an obligation as a higher creature. God only knows he doesn't act like the higher creature, not with his ways, but let's put that aside. It's supposed to be a quick shot. The animal's not supposed to run with a gut shot for days suffering and bleeding, is he?
Right, absolutely.
And in a slaughterhouse, the animal is supposed to be shot quickly and killed. I've been in a slaughterhouse, and I've never forgotten it as long as I lived. I didn't enjoy the experience. I went into a slaughterhouse in the Fiji Islands 30 years ago where it was very primitive. I will tell you that cow knew she was going to be killed, and so did every other cow out in the stockade. I saw the fear in their eyes. I smelled the fear of death on those creatures. They didn't like being prodded into the death chamber, but some poor Fijian with a broomstick had to put it into their anus to make them go forward to the man with the gun that was going to shoot him in the head. Okay, so it's not a pretty sight, Jeremiah. We want the steak, but we don't want the slaughter. This goes to the whale. Why must we kill it in this day and age, in this late time of mankind, with so much cruelty on Earth? Why must we kill a 130-year-old whale? Why can't we protect the 130-year-old whale?
I don't even know why people have to really hunt for ivory anymore. And on that, I'd like to add another article I read. It was either through National Geographic, one of those excellent sort of science survey magazines, talked about the Saharan elephant in their groups. If one of them dies, and this happens a lot due to poaching, the other elephants of the group will circumambulate the carcass for days.
Yes, it's a survival instinct, hoping to protect it from further predation, hoping it will rise and join them again. It's very touching. In other words, there are sick elephants that will fall down or injured elephants that will fall down, and if they circle the injured elephant, they're protecting it, hoping it will rise again.
Right, but this is even after...
Well, it is getting sad. A lot of people who are depressives are going to wind up really calling their doctor today. I agree with you on the main point. That animals have spirits. I'm not one of these who say that when a baby... I'll never forget when I was in university and I had my first child, some so-called professors, the most liberal progressives of the bunch, used to say, oh, your child's not smiling, the infant. He has gas. You know, I've been around Nazi-like people in my lifetime. And the Nazis are the ones who said that humans have no spirits and no souls. You understand that? They were all mechanistic. Haven't you heard that, Jeremiah?
Absolutely. It's a way to just...
They say that human beings are mechanisms. We're not even spirits ourselves. There are humans walking this planet with PhDs and medical degrees who don't even see us as unique and divine. And they see animals as nothing but robots made to be experimented upon. I gave up a very nice fellowship when I went to graduate school and wound up broke and poor because I wouldn't kill rats in a cage because I heard my deceased father talking to me when I was in that laboratory the first day. And from the grave, my father said to me, this is what you evolved for, is to kill animals, kill little furry creatures? This is what you evolved for? It was a question that came from the other side to me, Jeremiah. And I left. I went to the professor and I said, I can't do this. I will not kill the animal. I'll do anything else in this pharmacological laboratory, but I will not kill those rats. He said, then you're going to be fired. I said, well, you know, I came all the way from New York. I don't have a dime. I won't be able to live. He said, that's your problem. I said, then I quit. He said, you're fired. And guess what? The Red Sea parted. I discovered botany where I didn't have to kill anything. I have the greatest callers in the world. It's astounding to me who calls the show. Ordinary people with extraordinary minds. The very people who built this country still exist. The very people who saved this country still exist. Only they're never heard from except on very rare occasions. WOR in New York City. Charlie, we're talking about life and death and humanity. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
That's one of the reasons the Torah mandated not eating carnivores.
That's interesting. Let's define that for the listener. So obviously, a cow is not a carnivore. You're talking about an animal that eats other animals.
Yes.
And the Torah says that the reason you're not to eat a carnivore is because there's no humane way to kill the carnivore?
Yes, that's one of the reasons. I mean,
it's interesting. Let me see if I analyze this. There are many people listening to the show who would kill a carnivore humanely. I mean, through a clean shot, wouldn't they? One shot and the animal's dead.
In modern times, but in ancient times, there was no way to do it.
Oh, because the animal would fight back, and it was a fight to the death, and the animal would be slaughtered, in other words, in a fight in the ancient days. That's interesting. I never thought of it that way. Well, you know, let's talk about humane slaughter for a minute, because to some people, to vegetarians, those words are oxymoronic. Humane slaughter. But there is humane slaughter, and there is inhumane slaughter. I mean, obviously, we agree on that, Charlie, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Now, as an Orthodox Jew, in warfare, let's talk about warfare, man killing man. Are there not rules on how to kill your enemy?
Well, you're not supposed to cause inordinate suffering. Certainly not.
Okay, the Arab takes pleasure on a battlefield in desecrating the remains of the enemy he kills. They behead them, they cut off their genitals, or sometimes before the individual is killed, they will torture them. The Jew is prohibited from that behavior. Is that correct by his own teachings?
Absolutely.
So by the Jewish and Christian tradition, the warrior does not desecrate or torture the enemy. Now you don't read that in Associated Press, do you, Charlie?
No, I don't think so.
No, and you don't read what the Arab does to the captured soldier very often on a regular basis, and that means the other Muslim as well, by the way. They will torture, and they will torment, and then they will desecrate another Muslim on a battlefield. That's also true, Charlie. It's not just directed at the non-Muslim. They survive as a nation. So, you know, you want to talk about whales, you want to talk about spirits, you can get into anything. Any discussion that is good will lead you to every other discussion. Any discussion that is spirited will lead you to every discussion on the earth. I could talk about man. I could talk about beast. I could talk about war. I could talk about peace. I could talk about God. I could talk about the devil. All because of this story that touched me about the whale being killed by this greedy Eskimo. John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello. I'm just calling about the spirit nature of the animals and what you had been talking about earlier.
Yes.
I'm actually a Christian, and I find in the Bible, even though I have disagreements with many people who are Christian, that animals are clearly described in heaven. And God says even Jesus himself, when he returns, will be on a white horse followed by an army on white horses.
Hmm. Now, you're a veterinarian, according to the call screening device that I have?
Yes, sir.
Obviously, you've seen animals die in front of your eyes.
Yes, we treat them, and we try to save them, and sometimes...
Now, when an animal dies, have you seen anything that you'd like to share? Is there anything unique about it, or is it just like a human dying?
Well, I've only seen maybe one human die. My family members, and I would tell you that there is a bond that forms between the animals and us, that the more you get to know them, you know from your own dog, I know I hear you talk about him, that there is a strong bond there, and it's an unconditional love, and I consider them a gift from God to teach
us.
So
do I. I absolutely consider it a gift from heaven to have this dog around me, this spirit. I call him my spirit friend. My last dog, Snowy, I called her a spirit guide. There were many nights I would dream that that dog was leading me in places in my dreams. I haven't had that with Teddy. I've had Teddy following me in my dreams, but I haven't had him leading me. As I used to walk down the streets of San Francisco, some days I would say, now what's the proper face to wear walking amongst human animals? Because we all put on a face. There's no question about it. And what face shall we wear? And some days I'd say, how would Snowy look if she were a human walking down the street, since everyone loves Shelties? And in my own mind, I would take on the spirit of the Sheltie, and somehow, I don't know, I had better luck walking down the street with people than I did as my normal grumpy self.
That's good. I love that.
Now, I mean, that's why I would say they were somewhat spirit guides. You can learn from your animals, you know. Thank you, John. No, when Snowy died, you know, I'm going to tell you the Snowy death story. It's a very quick story because it's just another pet passing away. It's not like a mother dying, believe me. I'm not putting it in the same category. It's one man talking to you about a pet dying. And I know it's a very emotional topic for some of you because we live in an isolated, atomized world where there's no friends, no one you can trust. Families have been blown up from each other. Hate prevails. Father, son, son, father. It's a terrible time to be a human being in some ways. Terrible. And so many of us have turned to animals, because they love us. They love us, and then when they die, we're heartbroken. Now, a couple of years ago, Snowy got old, and she started to get arthritis, and she could hardly walk, and she got very fat and this and that. And I remember her like Lassie. She would jump over logs that I put for her from when she was young and blah, blah, blah. Now you see her like, you know, an aging parent. When the parent was vigorous, now he's in a nursing home, shriveled up without teeth. It's a heartbreak. You know, you're better off actually seeing your father drop dead when he's still healthy in a certain way. I don't know what to say in a way. Maybe I was blessed. I don't want to put a kibosh on my own self. But my father died rather, you know, in his 50s. I didn't have to see him go through that decaying and becoming a helpless, worn-out creature in a wheelchair. He told me he didn't want to go there. He said, I'd much rather die when I still have some dignity. I don't want anyone to wipe my behind for me. That was the way he was. So anyway, maybe he dictated it that way. We're living in extraordinary times. The last thing we need is a sourpuss feminist left over from the 60s, bringing back the panoply of maniacs like Janet Reno, Madeleine Halfbright, who bombed Serbia for no reason whatsoever, and the other killers and murderers who are under the guise of putting themselves off as some great heroes. Reincarnated before God, they pay for their crimes. In this world, they get away with murder. But I've lived through some historic times in my life. You won't believe this. And here they are. Look what I have seen in my lifetime. I want to show you how long I've been around this planet so you're going to get a feeling of what I've seen in my lifetime. One, Superman defeated by every man in World War II. Two, the first atomic bomb used in warfare. The establishment of the State of Israel. The popularization of television. This is all in my lifetime. The popularization of air conditioning. The popularization of air travel. The popularization of the personal computer. The invention of the internet, the assassinations of John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, and Martin Luther King Jr. I've seen the first man walk on the moon. I've seen the mainstreaming of homosexuality. I've seen the complete integration of blacks and whites. I've seen the development of mass welfare for unproductive citizens. I've seen the destruction of America's judicial system by corrupt lawyers. I've seen the meltdown of America's borders. I've seen the self-genocide of America's European-American majority through a mass abortion and mass tolerance of diverse sexualities. I've seen the acceptance of narcotics. I've seen the debasement of religion. I've seen the takeover of corporations by gamblers and con men. I've seen the elimination of grades in many schools. I've seen the introduction of racial quota systems. I've seen the impeachment of a president. What will I see in the future? Well, that's for you to decide, not me. Harold on WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, I got a good story for you. Listen to this. My sister was here from Ohio this weekend, okay? And she reminded me of something. We were kids. We used to go upstate to, like, Wurtsboro, Spring Glen. It's 1962, like this. I'm about 4 or 5. She's about 7 or 8. And they would have the casino up in the bungalow colonies, remember? So they had.
Well, let me explain what that is. A casino was a sort of separate building where they had entertainment and acts and things like that, like a little theater.
This is true. So they had the casino. Now, we were little kids. You couldn't go into the casino. They wouldn't let us go into the casino. Who knew what went on in the casino? We had to go to bed at night.
Right. So you thought it was something really risque, but it was kind of innocent by today's standards.
Exactly. It was innocent by today's standards. So one weekend, I don't know how they did it, but they had this traveling troupe of midgets. Midgets came up, and they were on the bungalow colony, and it was in the casino, and they let the kids come in to see the act. So the midgets, they're tumbling, and they're jumping, and they're running up and down. There was this one midget who was very amorous with all the women, all the mothers in the casino. Now, it was a weekend because all the fathers were up there. So this one little midget, I don't know how he did it, he gets down real close to the floor, and he starts looking up under the women's dresses. The men catch on to this, and they don't like it. They run the midgets out onto Route 209. I remember it. The midgets got in the
truck. Oh, you mean they didn't today? They wouldn't run them out. They would be tolerant of the perverted midget.
It was the
today they would wonder if they could say anything to a perverse midget. They'd afraid they'd get sued by somebody from NYU. They'd say that although the midget was on the floor, he was an oppressed minority. And he had an obligation to look up women's skirts because he was deprived of this as a youth.
The funniest thing, I was a little kid and I...
They ran the entire... This sounds like a Fellini scene, running midgets out onto a highway.
It was the funniest thing.
But Harold, here's the main question I got to ask. It's very delicate. Were the midgets Jewish?
Well, I don't... You know, you asked me this question once before. I don't know if the midgets were Jews or not. I don't know. It was... happened up in the Catskills.
It just shows you what happens when you mix midgets with regular people.
It was the best.
They really ran them off the property, the midgets?
They ran them off the property. They ran them out onto Route 209. I remember it because I still go up there.
Were the midgets able to grab their valises before they left? Seriously now, I mean, do you know the full details?
I was there. I remember it. I mean,
they packed up their valises or they left their midget belongings in the room?
I believe they left their midget belongings there because...
Oh, God. This is a triple crime. In today's world, running midgets out onto a highway and making them leave their possessions, can you imagine what kind of lawsuit they would have had today?
The men got so angry, they ran them right out onto the road. It was hysterical.
Yes, those were the days that if anyone looked at their children wrong, the men would have beaten them up and thrown them out on a highway, naked probably.
Remember, they would have the chow chow truck would come up. He would have Chinese food. We would get Chinese food out on the road. These things are gone.
Oh, that must have been real healthful. Oh, yeah, Chinese food in a truck. That gives a new meaning to the word roach coach.
It doesn't happen. These things don't happen anymore.
No, but could you imagine eating Chinese food? I mean, you take your life in your hand in San Francisco in some cases. I mean, the restaurant, let's say, where you got to go in and have a pair of galoshes to go to the bathroom is a pretty good giveaway that you don't want to eat there. Okay, that's to start with. Where the water is like a quarter of an inch deep.
It was incredible.
But Chinese food in a truck? Unheard of.
Chinese food in a truck, the chow chow truck. I remember it. I was talking about
I never heard of that. That's a new one on me. Well, that's a good story. Midgets driven out onto 209. Thanks, Harold. Let me send you a gift. How about a free dinner coupon to the mafioso prison in Italy? Would you like that? I don't have a pass to that jail.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now listen up.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Season's greetings from the Savage Nation. Boy, do I have a special treat for you. It's the best of 2010 from the Savage Nation. Here is the best from Michael Savage from the month of January. I told you about a wonderful movie I had seen on the airplane when I was coming back from last week. I got a DVD of it called, I think, Defiance. And it was about the Bielski brothers, the true story of three men who defied the Nazis, built a village in the forest, and saved 1,200 Jews. It's one of the most astonishing survival stories I've ever read in my life. But in reading this, I see what happens when the Germans come into the city after the country is falling apart during World War II. And the atrocities that are committed. People are lined up and shot for no reason whatsoever. And it's the killers that were put in power by the Nazi high command. They would be killers from the Einsatzgruppen. They would be killers from Heinrich Himmler's feared SS Schutzstaffel. They would be killers from the SD. There would be killers from the Orpo, the Order Police. The Gestapo, you probably heard of, the Secret State Police. There would be killers from the Waffen-SS and the Kripo, or Kriminalpolizei, the criminal police. They conducted slaughters in the days following the invasion. They killed Polish intellectuals. They killed partisan fighters and mainly any Jewish civilian who was a leader. They just killed them, lined them up, and shot them. And then they had the Jewish girls clean the blood from the streets, that their father's blood from the streets, while the Germans were celebrating in the streets of Poland. Now, what does this have to do with Obama? Absolutely nothing. It has to do with extremism. It has to do with the fact that when a government is hijacked by an extremist, as has been done under Obama, while he himself may be an ordinary, fanatical left-wing guy, but not really dangerous, it's the people around him that you have to worry about. It's always been the camp followers who gain the power, who conduct the atrocities. And right now, although we do not have atrocities being conducted in America, we have incompetence being conducted in America, and now we have a man named TSA, now Errol Suthers, who is worried not about Muslim fanatics. Remember, it was a Muslim who did the Fort Hood massacre. It was a Muslim from Nigeria. It was Muslims last week that committed ruckus, or they call them unruly now, unruly man. It's always unruly man, thanks to the schmucks in the Associated Press. The unruly men, they were all Muslims, all the unruly men. These disturbances, one after another, on an airline. And instead of focusing on the terror cells that are operating in this country, instead of focusing on the sleeper cells in the country, Muslim sleeper cells, instead of focusing on the Muslim training camps, we have video of them, I've put them up, others have put them up, of camps in this country where Muslim women are being taught how to attack and fight and kill and cut throats. And if you don't believe me, go and look at the video. Instead of focusing on this growing enemy within this country, and believe me, I will repeat again so you get it clearly, the mainline Muslim who wants the same thing as you do is as much afraid of the fanatic Islamist as you are. And I will repeat again that more moderate Muslims have been killed than Christians in this last 50 years by the radical Muslims than anyone else. And yet, focusing on this enemy within, this man, TSA nominee Errol Suthers, worries about those who are Christian identity-oriented, anti-abortion, and survivalists. I rest my case, but it's a very important story. Yeah, I eat oatmeal in the morning once in a while on cold days. I can't say I like this stuff. I eat it. But I needed meat over the weekend. Friday night, I went to a local Italian restaurant. I normally don't eat it. I eat calamari and shmalamari. I'm sick of fish. I ordered the grill, the grill plate. Oh, my God. When you haven't eaten meat in a long time. Well, it started earlier with me opening a very expensive bottle of Italian wine after the show on Friday. I was in the mood for it. It was overrated. It's a funny thing with wine. I really prefer a beer, to be honest with you. I don't know what it is lately. But anyway, I went in the restaurant. They let me bring the wine in without corkage, which is nice. Because I know all the waiters. You know, I give them a bigger tip. And I ordered the grill. It had a lamb chop. It had a piece of steak on. But they had a sausage on that plate. And if you don't eat sausages a lot, and then you have one, something funny happened. You got to listen to this stuff. I sit down. I grumble. I don't want to go. Don't bother me. I'd rather stay home. I'd rather make spaghetti and green peas. Leave me alone. No, you'll be happy. Go to the restaurant. Go to the restaurant. So I order the grill plates. It's a funny side story. I cut into the sausage, and it squirted right into my eye. I swear to God. It was like God was saying, don't eat me. Right into the right eye. Luckily, I had my glasses on, and the hot fat went right into the eyeglass. It was so delicious, I almost fainted. I couldn't stop eating it. So I go to the restaurant the next morning. I couldn't get the sausage out of my mind. It was so tasty. I said to the waiter, he went over that morning, he asked the chef. So he told me the name of the brand, which I'm not going to mention because they don't advertise. But the style is a Calabrese sausage. That's the style. So I go to my local Italian deli. And they don't have the brand that I'm looking for. They have their own brand of Calabrese. It was awful. Dreadful. So it just shows you how brands are important in products. I never tasted anything as good. And then I went back to dinner at the same restaurant Saturday night with friends who insisted on taking me to dinner. God bless them. And I didn't order what Mrs. S. ordered, the same exact dish. I reached over. I tried the sausage again. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Savage.
Here is the best from Michael Savage from the month of January. I was watching C-SPAN last night. I after the show, I went home and I cooked myself dinner. I'll tell you what I made. I make a I usually give you a recipe a day lately, but I like to cook at night. I specialize in simple dishes that are very complex. Now, they're really very easy to cook. So anyway, I'm cooking and I'm watching C-SPAN. And I'll tell you what I made. I made what's called Spanish rice. Somebody called it risotto. I gave away half the dish to a friend who came over in a take-home thing because it was so good. I knew the next day nothing's really that good. So you start with a little. No, it's simple. You get a hot frying pan. You get the frying pan with a top on it. I love those little Dutch oven frying pans. I like to cook with a top on it because I tend to splatter the entire kitchen. The problem with it is you tend to steam the food rather than saute the food that way. But you got to, if you put the cover on and leave it slightly off, slightly ajar, you get what you want without splattering the stove. And it does keep the heat and it makes it consistent. So I had some very good chopped meat since I was talking about not using orangutans and chimpanzees in medical research. I also told you I'm not a vegetarian and I do eat cow. So I had some low-fat organic cow in the house that I hadn't used, and I figured, all right, I'll use that. So what I did was is that first I take about an eighth of a pound of it and break it up into little pieces and throw it into the frying pan when it's hot, as I said. Turn it so you're not burning it. You don't want to get it black. It tastes horrible, chopped meat, when it's blackened. You want to cook it. All the redness goes out of it. Not any more than that. Then pour the fat out of the pan. I don't know about you, but I can't stand the taste of meat fat in a dish. I know many of you think it's good. All right, I pour it out. Pour it out and throw the meat back in. Now put chopped scallions on top of it. And turn the heat down to simmer, where there's almost no heat. It's just warm at this point. Because at the same time I'm doing this, I'm actually cooking the rice in a rice cooker that I bought 35 years ago. And no one has ever made a better one. It's a little like unit that I got in 30 years. And so it's 1 3/4 cups of water to 1 cup of rice. I like basmati rice in the cooker. Okay, it's a steamer with a top. And it takes 20 minutes consistently, the best rice cooker I've ever had. So I'm making the rice, which I'm going to use in the dish. I'm heating the meat up. Now I put in the scallions on top of the meat. Then you put whatever other vegetables you want. It doesn't really matter. It's to your flavor. Then I put in some of that incredible Calabrese sausage that I cooked the other day. I put that into the pan. Then I had a chicken that was actually bought in the market, which I love. I pulled a wing off it and threw that into the pan. I remember, keep it hot, keep it moving, keep it turning, keep it moving, keep it hot, keep it moving, keep it turning, keep turning. And you put all the vegetables on the top of it. Now, the next thing is you got to put the paprika on it. I love paprika, particularly in the winter. Put it all over the meat, put it all over the vegetables, and stir it. Keep it hot, keep it covered. Because you don't want the water-soluble vitamins to go out of the vegetables. Otherwise, you're losing everything you're supposed to gain. You don't want the vitamin C to go up in the steam because it's water-soluble. That's why you use covered cookware for vegetables in particular. So you're turning it, you're putting in whatever vegetables you want, you put in that. Okay, now the rice is ready. Take it out just before it's completely dried out, while it's still a little wet. Put the entire 1 cup of cooked rice that's now beautiful, fluffy, right into the pan. And stir it all together and immediately add the tomato sauce that you have ready, which is usually, you know, the commercial tomato sauces that they have. It's like a whole jar. I always use a half of it because I don't like to throw it out. It's never good when you open it. You never use it for another week and you have to dump it. So I buy the half jars, and a half a jar is perfect for this dish. And you put the half a jar in on everything, and again, more garlic, the better. I forgot to tell you, I put an entire head of garlic in. A whole onion was chopped up and put in there. I forgot about that. I put that in earlier, but I didn't burn it. Stir it, stir it, stir it, so that the sauce gets completely mixed into the rice and the chicken and the sausage and the meat. And basically, you keep the cover on it. When it's hot, bingo. You got enough to serve 3 people, 4 people there, or 4 small children, whatever you want. As I say, I cooked that while watching C-SPAN and drinking a little wine. Remember today as another day like yesterday, which is everyone's a winner. Anyone who makes it past Doug the Screener and gets on the show with something interesting to say will get a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Eureka, California. Kim, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike. How you doing? I've learned a lot from you. I'm a first-time caller. I credit you for teaching me one thing, a lot of things, but one thing is I give now to charities that I really believe in, and you
taught
me that.
That's right. You know, that's the important thing is I found a few that I trust that I give money to, and believe me, in most of my life, I didn't have an extra penny to give anybody. But if I have an extra few bucks, I give it to these groups that I list on my website and some I don't even list.
Well, like you, I live with a large dose of common sense, and I give to what I believe in.
That's right. And always look into the one thing to look in when you're giving money. I'll tell you about it. Charities. When you look at a nonprofit, find out what percent of the money goes to programs and what percent of the money goes to overhead. And if it's not 90% going to programs, don't give them a dime.
Yeah, how do you research
well,
that?
Well, if they're a nonprofit, if it's a 501c3 nonprofit corporation, then they have to file tax returns, which you can access. Before you give them a penny, ask them to see their tax returns. And if they don't give them to you, then don't give them any money. And ask them how the money is spent. What percent goes? Let's say I'm giving to a group that says we're going to save elephants. So I ask him, well, what percent of $100,000 or $100 goes to save the elephants and what percent goes for administration costs? You know what I'm saying?
Once again, I'm learning a little more from you.
Right, right. That's the most important thing about nonprofits. That's what you got to ask him. Sacramento, Gregory, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Dr. Savage.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, just wanted to say a little bit like the other caller said. I've been listening to you for quite a while now, back in, I guess, 96 or 97, right after my father passed, and it was quite a blessing to find you. You've been
That's kind of nice. No, I substitute for the uncles and the fathers that are gone. I know that.
Well, you're kind of like my group guru with all the wisdom and a thing you just touched on today about seeing God in nature. And I remember a thing you said the other day on the chimpanzees. It just knocked me to the when you said how a man has to live by what dictates his soul. And it just
yes,
almost
right.
Put me to tears.
Well, what do you mean when I was saying and medical research on chimpanzees?
And, yeah, but you were just explaining yourself, and it just you were explaining why you have the views that you do, kind of.
Oh, in other words, why I took that upon myself to make that an issue on ending lab testing on chimpanzees.
I walked out on Jaws because it hit you where it shouldn't hit you.
Yeah, well, right. Everyone has their own little things in life that move them. So what motivates you to call today, Gregory?
Well, just all the way above and just wanted to thank you for being your modern-day Moses, Dr. Savage. And
well, I wouldn't put myself in that category for 2 reasons. One, I don't stutter. And B, I've not let anybody through the Reds. I haven't made the C part yet.
You're leading us through a storm right now. So,
well, okay, I can see that. We are living through a storm, and Obama is sort of a pharaoh. He has a pharaonic figure. There's no question about it. If actually you look at him and how he looks, he's somewhat of a pharaonic figure, and he is sort of a mini pharaoh at this point.
Okay.
There is there's a great biblical parallel here. There's no question about it.
I can't believe I came up with that, but that was more of your interpretation of it. See, that's what makes you the good seer that you are, sir.
All right. I'm the good shepherd today, Gregory. Thank you for being such a loyal listener. It's listeners like you that make me get up in the morning. There's a lot to be looked at here in what's going on in Haiti. And the ramifications for the United States are horrendous here. I know what's coming. We're probably going to have between 50,000 and 100,000 Haitians led into America on an asylum claim right now by Obama. South Florida will be inundated, and as a result, it will be perennially in the hands of the radical communist left, if this is allowed. But it's going to happen. Under the pretext of compassion for Haiti, and don't get me wrong, I think that we should provide aid for Haiti, but for Haitians in Haiti, and that we should not let 50,000 to 100,000 Haitians flood into Florida. That's the last thing this country needs and the last thing Florida needs for many different reasons. Florida has its own social problems. The last thing you want to do is upset what's already in a tenuous balance. But having said that, of course the world has to help Haiti right now. That's what a world is all about. If there's extra money, give it to them.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
So I'm reading the paper this morning, the electronic paper. Italy's new dining experience, high security. Rome. Diners are flocking to what could be called the most exclusive restaurant in Italy. One located inside a top security prison where the chefs and waiters are mafiosi, robbers and murderers. Serenaded by Bruno, a pianist doing life for murder, the clientele eat inside a deconsecrated chapel set behind the 60-foot-high... Why would they deconsecrate a chapel? Anyway, set behind the 60-foot-high walls of the daunting 500-year-old Fortezza Medicea at Volterra near Pisa. Under the watchful eye of armed prison guards, a 20-strong team of chefs, kitchen hands, and waiters nightly serve 120 diners who all have undergone strict security checks. Tables are booked weeks in advance. Prison director Maria Grazia Giampiccolo said the inmates have developed a flair for their cooking. He said, I feel haute cuisine in a place like this prepares the inmates for when they are eventually released. The guests enjoy their meals, and although the security seems at first very daunting and imposing, they get over it quite quickly and forget about the guards. The mafia may be in charge, but there is no horse's head on this menu. Instead, a smart, mainly middle-aged crowd tucks into a vegetarian signature menu cooked up by head chef Egidio, serving life for murder and competitively priced at $33. The restaurant opened 2 months ago and has proved so popular that Italy's prison department is thinking of trying it in other prisons. I got to laugh for a minute because this can only happen in Italy, where food is life. Now, if you went to a prison in America and you had the criminals in this country cooking, can you imagine what you wind up eating? Jell-O. You'd eat Jell-O and candy bars. That would be their idea of haute cuisine. It's not Italy. Securing a table is as tricky as getting past the sternest maitre d'. Diners are thoroughly vetted by the blah, blah, blah. But there's no danger of the meal being disrupted by the annoying chirrup of cell phones. You hear this? They have to be handed in. Oh, I'd love to eat in this joint. Along with handbags, and I would like to eat here. If only I could go to a restaurant where some idiot moron from hell didn't talk on a phone. Blah, 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 I'm so important. And yeah, I'm going to Zurich. Yeah, I just got back from Atlanta. Yeah, I spoke to... Yeah, blah, 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 blah. I feel like pouring coffee into their cell phone. Why do they let them even talk? It's one of the reasons I go to restaurants. I can't listen to people. I'm in a talk business. So when I'm through working, I don't want to listen to chatter. But most people have jobs where they can't talk. So what they do is they have a glass of wine already for $6. Blah, 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 blah. Shoot their mouth. I give them two glasses of wine. They don't shut up. Then you get hit with a bad perfume on top of it all that wafts over and you got a double migraine and there's no point in eating there. Give me this prison. It sounds like a good place to go. Handbags and the diners go through the same thing.
in the kitchen, Egidio, a burly 50-year-old from Taranto in Southern Italy, reigns over his team of six chefs. He screams, "The pasta is boiling over. More salt, less garlic. Keep stirring the pasta sauce," he shouts. 17 years into his sentence, he is thinking of going into the restaurant business when they finally let him out. Like any Italian, I take my food very, very seriously. I like to be sure the diners are satisfied. And they don't just enjoy the food, but enjoy it with the same passion that I prepare it. He's in for a murder sentence. He's a prisoner in Italy. Maybe we could elect him to office here. He could form an entire sentence. Perhaps unsurprisingly, given his record, diners have been reluctant to criticize. He said, "Before this, I couldn't even fry an egg. But now here I am preparing five-course dinners, and I have not had any complaints." It could be because they know who he is. "Yeah, it's delicious, Adige. Oh, I love it. Oh, yeah, it's great. Terrific. Yeah, tell him that his food's no good." Most of the dishes the restaurant serves are Southern Italian staples from organized crime hotspots like Puglia, Sicily, and Naples. Sommelier Santolo Matroni from Naples landed behind bars after getting into, quote, a spot of bother when he was younger, which earned him a 24-year sentence for murder. He, too, is hoping to use his new skills when he gets out in about 7 years. He says, "I'd like to think that when I get out of here, I can start a family, maybe get a job in a restaurant or hotel. Hey, you should come to America. You know, it's the kind of immigrant we need." The unique nature of the restaurant has imposed some restrictions. Guards watch over the inmates in the kitchens at all times, and the cutlery used as plastic as are the plates, said Mr. Giampiccolo. Yeah. "The main thing is trust, and we trust the inmates to behave. If we didn't, we would not allow this to happen." Yeah, well, I'll tell you the subtext in a minute. Diners profess themselves delighted. "When I heard about it, I thought it sounded fun, so we booked a table, and I have to say the food has been very good," said off-duty police officer, blah, blah, blah. "The fact that the dishes are prepared by murderers, armed robbers, mafiosi, or terrorists doesn't really bother me, though I might be worried if someone had been convicted of poisoning." And that's it. Italy's new dining experience, high security. For years, I would go past Alcatraz Island, and I would think to myself, my God, what a great restaurant this would make here instead of a waste. Why don't they just let some restaurant guy open up Alcatraz and you take a boat to it and eat there? In San Francisco, in fact, they could probably rent out the cells for the night with horses, you know, and then they could be running the movie They Shoot Horses, don't they? Tucson, Arizona. Todd, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I met a lady in the parking lot that was listening
to your
radio.
This is a family show, sir.
Oh, yeah. She was listening to your radio program, a little French immigrant lady. And yeah. I was listening to the fact she was listening to your program, and I looked at her and said, "Are you listening to Dr. Savage?" And the look on her face was like I caught her stealing or something. She looked up as she turned the radio down, and she apologized to me, and I started laughing. I said, "Oh, no, ma'am." I said, "I love Dr. Savage. He's great." And she got into some stories about her French culture and coming from France, and, I mean, the praises that she had for you and how accurate you were and the way you described, you know.
Now, why did she turn the show off, do you think? Because, what, she was afraid you were a hater of the show?
More than likely. That's what I mean. She kind of had that embarrassed, like, you know, she got caught doing something she shouldn't have.
Well, she sounds like a nice lady, also very shy. And how did it end up? Okay, or someone pulled a gun out in the parking lot?
No. She was kind of woman you'd want to, you know, go have a drink with and chat.
Hold it now. As I said, it's a family show. We can't go there. Well, how old a woman was she, Todd?
Oh, she was probably in her, I'd say 70s.
But she was French, so therefore the rules still apply.
<Very good.
laughs> Hey, thanks for thinking of me. That's all. It's a light day. Play another Bobby Darin. You did it already beyond the sea. What else do we have for him? Of him.
Every night I hope
who's this? That's not Bobby Darin. This is Bobby Darin?
Girl,
I don't like it. I'm not into it. Let me hear something that reminds me of a 57 Chevy. Two four-barrel carburetors, fins, give me like, I don't know, give me Danny and the Juniors at the Hop. There you go. That's all. Give me something, a real throwback song. I want throwback. I want muscle car music. I don't want to hear about senior sins. This makes you want to get out in a convertible, doesn't it, and race around? All right, turn it off. We're having too much good feelings here on the Savage Nation. I've got to get the angst going in order to keep the audience listening. I got to get them angry, I suppose. But I may not be doing much more of it. I am so beyond
anger. I am so beyond rage at the political machine. I am so beyond wanting to change the Democrat or Republican parties that I could care less. I become apathetic at this point. I may change. Don't call me and tell me not to be apathetic. It's the greatest crime. All right, I understand that. I may continue to talk about filet of soul and my dog for a while and the red brick buildings and how I can feel the semen in the brick. I mean, S-E-A-M-E-N, the semen in the brick. It was an area where the semen were waylaid over the years. They'd go into their bars, get you know, knockout drops, next thing they'd be put on a ship somewhere. And I could feel this in this area, the Barbary Coast. You walk down these streets, it's filled with, like, art galleries, antique stores, a lot of lawyers for some reason. Thankfully, most of them went out of business in the last year, and the buildings are vacant. But they were formerly like little hotels for seamen and, you know, prostitutes, dance halls, that kind of thing here in San Francisco from the Gold Rush era. The buildings date to, like, you know, Civil War, post-Civil War period. I've always liked, even when I went to St. Louis, I'd go to the Gas Lamp District. If I went to Seattle 20 years ago, I'd always go to Old Town. I always liked Old Town. Old Town, Old Town. Whatever city I'm in, I go to the Old Town. Why is that? Like, when I went to Quebec when I was a youngster, I used to love Quebec because of the feeling of the old city of Old Quebec, the paving stones, the Chateau Frontenac. I used to love shooting down that, what do they call that, where you go in like a sled, a toboggan run they had at the hotel. Wow. You get a bottle of brandy, you drink half of it, and you get in the toboggan. Before you know it, it's you're sailing along and you're having fun. What do you want me to do? Politics, food, music, science, poetry, global warming, how to care for children, vitamins, the care and feeding of children, as I say. Anything you want me to talk about would be great. I think that the time for liberals and conservatives in this country to come together and defeat the Islamofascists before it's too late is really upon us. Unless the radical liberal comes to understand that his greatest enemy is not the conservative, but the Islamofascist who would stone him to death, cut his throat, this country is doomed because a house divided cannot stand. Now, I'm not the one to pull everyone together. It's impossible for me to do it. I wish I could. I wish I had the power. I wish I had the power to reach through those distorted lenses where the eye that alters, alters all. There's no way to fix people who are so blinded with hatred. You can't fix them. I've met people who are blind with hatred, and they scare me. I've met people like that in my lifetime, particularly when I was younger. I'd get into situations that I couldn't get out of, and it was really frightening to get in those places. And to then extricate yourself from them is not easy. And I've been around people who have no reason. And I don't like people who have no reason. To me, that's a form of human life that's a place I don't want to go to, okay? Savage. The story I'm going to tell you occurred when I was a young man, first a kid and then a young man. And it was about a man who grew up as my father's, one of my father's best friends in a very poor neighborhood in New York City. They were immigrants together. Their parents came over. They came over, I think, maybe on the same boat, or they met each other in the slums of New York. And they both had a very tough life, and they worked their way up little by little, as the immigrants have to do and as they struggle in the society. And this man went into a business that took off at a certain point like a rocket. He hit a fad in a certain business, and he started to make a great deal of money, and he moved way beyond our family. While we lived in an attached house in Queens, New York, an attached brick house, he had the money to move his family to a detached house. Remember how important that distinction was in those days. It's like the Buick LeSabre as opposed to the Buick Roadmaster. Well, God forbid you a Rockefeller, you bought a Cadillac, if you can imagine. That's how people used to grade themselves in those days by their success, you know, their status, cars and houses. I don't suppose it's much different today. It just isn't as easy to figure out in some regard, not on the road anyway. Anyway, so he moved to this detached house in Roslyn, New York. And it was a beautiful house. It had its own garden all around it. We only had a little strip of grass in the backyard and a little teeny one in the front. And the carpet was wall to wall, and it was pink. And he was a big cigar smoker. And we go over and visit, and I had a very good time. He would gloat, you know, with the cigar and lord it over my father. And we'd leave. My father never said anything against him. But, you know, I could see in his eyes that he was in his, you know, he was a little, let's say lost that little battle at that time. You know how men are. I mean, men are competitive. Even if they love their friend, if their friend does better than them, there's a degree of envy in every human being. It's just one of the cardinal sins. As years went on, the man's business continued to thrive. And then I left home. I moved away from New York City. I went and did my thing collecting plants, working for my graduate degrees. Thousands of miles away. I was living 6,000 miles away, then 9,000 miles away in the Fiji Islands. And lo and behold, on one of my trips back to New York when I was already a father myself, I had heard that this man's business had collapsed entirely. The fad that he had rode like a wave had died. Women were no longer buying that particular product. And the man who had a chain of successful wholesale stores lost everything. He lost everything, and it was so fast that he wound up living where he started, on the Lower East Side of New York, in a poor relative's apartment with his wife and the relative's family, back where he started in a one-room apartment. And that's where I come in. I come back from one of my trips to the Fiji Islands. I'm a young man in my, I don't know how old I must have been. I don't remember, 25, 30. I don't remember what age I was already anymore. And there he was sitting in my father's house. And I love this man. I loved him like another father. I loved all my father's friends. And you know how it is when you're a kid in a very close-knit community. You tend to love the people like they're your own. You know, we all grew up so closely together. There was never a bad word between him and my father. Man, he's sitting there shrunken up in the chair in my living room where he had lost everything. And he looks up at me, still smoking a cigar. And he was shrunken in the chair. And he looks up at me in his eyes and he says, Michael, look what happened to me. Look what happened to me. And his eyes were like wandering left and right. He didn't understand what happened to him. And he said, I'd rather I have cancer than what God did to me. And lo and behold, I soon left New York. I went back to do what I did, which is collecting plants. And I heard that 2 years later, he died from one of the most rapidly invasive forms of brain cancer. Be careful what you say. God hears the truth, but waits. I'll go to a food thing now. People like that segment, but it's true because it's real. I go to my favorite Chinese, the one that doesn't feel like I just ate crazy glue when I leave. You know what I'm saying? That's how I judge Chinese restaurants. Either it's either a CG or a non-CG. Not MSG anymore. It's crazy glue. Because the real bad ones, you walk out, your lips stick together, you start to talk like Bonnie Tang. The average Chinese restaurant you leave today, you get to sound like Bonnie Tang. So I go to my favorite place where it's not like a crazy glue sauce. And the food was excellent, but I noticed something. If I order the seafood clay pot in this place, which I did, they cut back on the seafood by the number of shrimp, and they added tofu, which I hate. I can't stand fried tofu. I hate it. I don't like tofu to begin with. What's with the tofu? The reason they ate tofu is they didn't have meat. What do you think they ate tofu for a million years in China? Or 2,000, 5,000? What do you think is better for you? You believe that baloney? The rich ones ate meat when they can get their hands on it, or a duck or a fish. It was the poor, the peasants in the field, you let them eat tofu. So now I have to engage myself. Like, the point is, though, they're cutting back on the protein. I went to another place, a cheaper Chinese restaurant, local. And, it's another, the dim sum that I ordered before the meal. Normally it was four pieces in an order, now it was three. I said, wait a minute, am I imagining? Because if you're eating with someone, you get two each. So now you each have one, and already I'm a fast eater. I want the next one before the person I'm eating with already ate the first. I want the third. And it's gone. You don't know what to do. You can't split a dim sum in half. It sticks to the chopstick. What I'm getting at is they're cutting back. It's like three-quarter value now. So I'm cooking at home more. In fact, I had fun this morning. I bicycled to a food implement store, like these fancy stores that won't be in business soon, with stuff that nobody needs, you know, kitchen items that nobody wants or needs. My mother had a kitchen with a few pots in it and pans with four burners, an electric stove, in a tiny kitchen. In fact, you can see a picture of it in a previous book of mine. She could knock out five restaurant meals for one at one sitting. on those little electric burners with aluminum pots. And wonderful, incredible meals, complicated. Today you go into a house, a $10 million kitchen that's never been cooked in. Never been. In fact, if someone cooked in it, they might have to renovate the kitchen. The average house in Tiburon, California, are you kidding me? Huh. What, are you kidding? We don't cook in here. We just do freebase in here. Yeah. So the point is, I'm cooking at home, so I go to this food implement store, and I bought something for myself that I've wanted for 20 years. It's not that it's expensive. It's just that I haven't gotten around to. You know what it is funny? It's like a kitchen weight, a cast iron weight that you put on top of a piece of chicken or a hamburger. So while it's cooking, the fat goes out of it. You know what I'm talking about? I've always wanted one. To me, that was like a cooking advanced cooking to have one of those. Anyone had like a kitchen weight? Because ever since I was a kid in Queens, if I would go to the luncheonette for a hamburger for lunch, I have to make this admission. I did have hamburgers at one point in my life. I know it's a crime against BO's administration. But they would always have like on the griddle, the weight to push the fat out into the. So I bought one of those, and to go with it, then there was an Italian thing that they were selling on the same order that was not cast iron. It was like 10 pounds, a circle of stainless steel. It's a big round one that you sit on top, you put it on top of two steaks or on top of a chicken. You can make mate chicken, which is unbelievable.
Savage.